Welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. My name's James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing and Global Impact Venturing publications. And it's a great pleasure to be back here once again for the weekly podcast. Thierry Hellitz is still on holiday, so hopefully enjoying a nice break, recovering after a sterling stint this year, covering the university and corporate scene when Rob's been away. And there seems to be few seeming certainties in life, but they do include death, taxes and lawsuits over a US election. Another is the impact of innovation and technology on all business areas, including lawyers and the legal services sector. Law firm Orrick, Herrington and Sutcliffe's recent investments in Priori Legal and Termsheet data analysis provider Omni, coinciding with Latham & Watkins and Clifford Chance's joint investment in legal tech platform Rainen Court's recent $4.5 million round, reflect the strategic interest in so-called legal tech startups. This is a change from nascent activity up until last year. Flurry of activity had started the 2010s, such as Google Ventures, now GV's backing of Rocket Lawyer, VC's success for LegalZoom, saw Denton's launch Next Law Ventures, an early-stage venture capital firm focused on legal technology, set up by Dan Jansen back in 2015. But as the Legal Tech Startup Report 2019 by Thomson Reuters, a media group and publisher of the Westlaw Case Histories and Analysis Services, said, quote, "The appetite for innovation of new technology solutions is not yet become the default way to work," end quote. This might be changing. Nextlaw Ventures is raising its second fund with external limited partners, Jansen has revealed on his LinkedIn profile, while serial entrepreneur Zach Posner has turned his attention to the sector with an investment in Omni and the creation of the Legal Tech Fund. Neil Lilani, managing director at Orrick, said its separate Legal Tech Fund had been started at about the same time as one of its most senior partners, Don Keller, spun out Joinder, a software-as-a-service collaboration platform that connects companies to their lawyers in January. Lilani said Orrick's fund made small investments to access information rather than greatly affect the capital table, in case being a larger shareholder affected its guidance as a founder-friendly counsel. He added, quote, "There is a need to innovate. Alternative law practices such as Axiom Legal, a UK-based provider of on-demand lawyers, and Clerky, set up by Orrick Associates to use our forms as the basis for formation documents without the need for a lawyer, are battling for early-stage deals on cost. We have wanted to work with early-stage entrepreneurs and then continue to provide counsel through the later stages, so cost efficiency on pricing is important. Innovation is deep in our culture. Orrick was one of the first firms to onshore its back office in West Virginia for research and finance and has developed its innovation centre. Cost efficiency is important, but founders recognise the importance of good counsel." End quote. The innovator's dilemma argues that incumbents in lucrative sectors underplay threats from cheaper rivals that start with less comprehensive offerings. Different threats abound, with accountants and tech and media firms buying or investing in lawyers, including accounting firm Deloitte's purchase of law firm Kemp Little this week, while last month legal information discovery platform Disco raised $60 million. The new legal fund complemented Orrick's general tech fund, which takes stakes in some clients as a participant rather than lead investor in rounds. Its direct investments are chosen for upside potential, quality of who else is involved, and management capabilities rather than in lieu of fees, Lilani added. In the dot-com bubble era before the millennium, law firms had a reputation for asking for 1% of equity in startups in lieu of fees, but Lilani said the market would not now bear this as it created scepticism of portfolio company quality. Instead, the venture market itself has become more competitive. Even through COVID-19, average valuations have broadly been seen to increase. Second big story of the past week, and it's always worth listening to really smart people. One of the perks of the job on Global Corporate Venturing, Global Impact Venturing and Global University Venturing is that basically means everyone in our network, as they engage in making the world a better place. So my thanks to Aaron Brandt and Nathan Pescarella at Hypertherm Ventures and its partner Mac49's Dave Moran and Paul Holland for the invitation to attend a webinar this week, including star speakers such as Hypertherm CEO Evan Smith, NEA Managing Partner Scott Sandell, and Vladimir Bulovich, Professor of Electrical Engineering Computer Science at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. While not the most diverse group on certain metrics, it was fascinating how industrial group Hypertherm has over the past 50 or so years grown out of its founder's garage into a company with 1,800 people focused on people, Planet and Profits. $30 million Hypertherm Ventures Fund is targeting early stage deals in advanced manufacturing, which is a difficult place to back with limited capital and awareness of the lengthy time horizons required. Think of the time from patent to commercialization of, for instance, Zips or Velcro, and it is easily beyond a decade, 12 and 13 years respectively, according to Bulovich. And the challenge is moving from idea or prototype to scale and the cost efficiency that can bring. It is relatively easy for students in a laboratory to whack electrical current through a pickle and see if it glows, but far harder to turn that light bulb moment into organic light-emitted diodes, or OLEDs, where the voltage can change the colour of the light. Venture capitalists can turn to software rather than hardware for faster proof points of whether an idea can scale, which is why just 3% to 5% of VC cash goes to hardware. Corporations in physical tech spaces, however, still need the new ideas to flow. And Bulovich said the traditional 10-year innovation cycle usually looked like ideas forming over a few years at university before a paper is presented at a conference where corporations can listen in for potential ideas and take them back to the corporate research and development labs for half a dozen more years of work than production. Long, risky and capital intensive, all of which are unappealing, especially if the average tenure of a hardware company CEO is 6 years, Bulovich added. Instead, universities are turning to startups for the middle years of development. Here, some seed or early stage capital allied to lab spaces such as Bulovich's MIT Nano facility can reduce costs and prototype ideas such as quantum dot OLEDs or carbon nanotube semiconductors or chips. In this light, it's perhaps no surprise to see MIT has committed $25 million, now $35 million, to VC firm Engine's first two deep tech-focused funds. And you can listen to Leslie Miller Nicholson's Director of the Technology Licensing Officer and Catalyst at MIT, share more in an interview with Thierry Hellis in a prior issue of our weekly podcast in the Leadership Series. The corporation can then buy, invest in, and or license the technology and scale it through its distribution platform, just as Samsung did with QD Vision and Cativa for OLEDs. It is a model other universities through the 10U platform are looking to develop, and Gov, for Global University Venturing, will report in on these plans in January's update from the community. The big story in the past week, it's expensive building cars, especially electric ones, with few signs they could be profitable outside of selling carbon offset credits to polluters. As Car and Driver magazine noted, the electric vehicle market is challenged as few consumers are interested. They are expensive compared to petrol or diesel cars, and traditional car companies have struggled to develop appealing brands, leaving the way clear for Tesla and other startups out of China, such as NIO, to try and take advantage. But the future seems to lie in that direction, given a predicted 21.1% compound annual growth rate over the next decade. As a result, Polestar, a Sino-Swedish electric car brand, jointly owned by Volvo Car Group and its parent company Geely, is in talks to raise $500 million from investors at a $6 billion valuation, according to Bloomberg. Polestar's first fully electric vehicle began production earlier this year in China, but ran into manufacturing difficulties. Others have found the space tricky too. Henrik Fiske, designer of the Aston Martin DB9 and the BMW Z8, formed his own company, Fiske Automotive, only for that venture to end in bankruptcy. His new, also eponymous car company, Fiske, has, however, exhibited more promise and last week merged with special purpose acquisition company Spartan Energy Acquisition Corp to raise $1 billion. Fiske is concentrated on design and told Fortune magazine in July, quote, "A lot of the hardware and vehicles is going to end up being a commodity, and therefore we are willing to share these parts with somebody else," end quote. This hardware, particularly the batteries, represents opportunities if the cost can be reduced. Rama Aman, CEO of MMG Capital, is advising Caltech electric battery spin-out Cienza on its European development plans as it looks to improve energy density at a lower cost than Tesla or Panasonic batteries and those of a host of other startups such as Northvolt, Grafenero, Neuwatech, S-Volt, Enervix, Celanano, Ampiris, Enervate, Scion or Solid Energy. The relative differences in performance are marginal rather than orders of magnitude better between these companies. The head of one Tier 1 car parts supplier's corporate venturing unit said, quote, "We just could not find any battery startups working on truly next generation technology or chemistries," end quote. Rethinking car batteries' primary use in transit could, however, change the dynamics. If refueling moves from in-transit to destination with electric vehicles, then the battery's main use could well be in storage and powering houses, providing grid-to-consumer backup to renewable energy sources such as solar and wind, where costs continue to plummet, but which remain uncertain in output compared to nuclear power. The business model rather than the technology becomes a defining characteristic of the shift to renewable power and electric. Elon Musk, founder of Tesla, identified this 4 years ago, and that it helps explain why its share price has seen a tenfold increase since then. Batteries and new material sector will, by the way, be reviewed for our next Global Energy Council report in early 2021. And after covering hydrogen fuel vehicles in last month's supplement, do get in touch with your insights. It is always fun as the end of the year creeps up to think about the technologies that will disrupt or transform the world over the next few decades. And Adrian Bock's selection covers a number of general and specific purpose technologies, such as green tech, graphene, blockchain, edge computing, 5G, AI cloud, smart tattoos, quantum computing, smart homes, autonomous vehicles, cryptocurrencies, satellite mega constellation, nanorobotics, effective computing, human augmentations, hydrogen fuel cells, CRISPR microchips, and meatless meat. And the meatless meat one is definitely catching people's attention currently, given the post-flotation performance of Beyond Meat, among others, as identified in March's special report on AgTech. The wider focus, however, is, quote, how to replace a grocery store, according to venture capitalists such as Andrew Ai, founder of Big Idea Ventures with Tom Nastrobioni, former partner at meat supplier Tyson's Corporate Venture Unit. Animal products are the second largest contributor to carbon dioxide emissions and climate change behind transport. Using plant or cell-based technologies to replace meat, seafood and dairy is creating attention, with Benson Hill raising $150 million late last week to combine artificial intelligence and big data technology with biology to determine the best plant breeding methods, in theory facilitating the development of better plant-based foods and ingredients. Wheat Sheaf Group, the ag-tech-focused family office of real estate owners Grosvenor Group, co-led Benson Hill's latest round with GV, corporate venturing arm of internet technology group Alphabet, formerly known as Google Ventures. And the syndicate included a supermarket chain, Emart, and the agricultural trading firm, Louis Dreyfus Companies. Wheat Sheaf had hired Katrin Burt as managing director a year ago from Syngenta Ventures, the corporate venture capital arm of Syngenta, one of the world's leading agribusiness and seed companies. About the same time, Louis Dreyfus Company, or LDC, hired Max Clegg to head its corporate venturing unit, LDC Innovations. Taking plant-based tubes out of the vegetarian aisle and across the rest of the grocery store without consumers having to compromise or change their taste or texture preference profile builds demand. And if proteins or other nutrients can be delivered at lower cost or land and water usage, it increases supply. An additional benefit would be to human health. If there are fewer factory-farmed animals requiring antibiotics or function as unintended crossover vectors for disease and virus mutations in species loops, such as mink. As I've said on the call, quote, plant-based foods is a historic event versus incremental additions to food groups, such as an extra soda or candy bar, end quote. Allied to reductions in plastic packaging possible with plants, and sustainability targets this decade become more feasible, but to do so requires scaling up. Insect, for example, raised $224 million last month to scale up its insect protein factories, while Keith Art, founder of peer protein developer Protix, noted the uneven levels of state aid between countries that could affect the entrepreneurial outcomes. Governments have been shocked by the relatively fragile state and global interdependence of food supply chains through the COVID-19 pandemic, and provenance and food safety are higher among people's concerns around the world, whether in the UK over potential imports of chlorinated chicken from the US, or Chinese parents' worries over baby milk poisoning. Singapore's state-backed Temasek is one of the government-owned vehicles focused on food, given the island's lack of space or natural resources, while Africa's demographics and market are drawing attention. This is leading to crossover opportunities, such as Polish Stock Exchange GPW setting up an agricultural fund with Poland's National Centre for Agricultural Support back in July. Corporations also join in the mix, even among rapid consolidation, with Thai Union Group setting up a $30 million corporate venturing fund, as well as commitments to external VCs such as Visvare's New Protein. Gerard Chia, general partner and founder of Visvare's New Protein's first two funds, said only 6 years ago, food tech was just a concept when it backed Insect in its pre-seed round. Now, there might be 50 companies offering insect-related products. However, Chia's broader focus is on how technology can meet industry's needs, such as identifying a chicken's gender, waste mitigation and food safety, or the vector between food and health. This makes sense, and capital will continue to flow given a total available market. It could potentially reach 9 billion people in future. After all, physiological needs are at the base of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And the fifth and final of the big stories this past week, we've seen the European Union has more than halved its planned investment in the continent's best entrepreneurs after budget cuts wiped at least 6 billion euros off its European Innovation Council, EIC. Stefan Wacki, head of unit for the Director General of Research and Innovation at the European Commission, in the panel at the NOP Optional Making Europe the Most Entrepreneurial Continent event last Friday, said the funding for the EIC will come in at 3.5 to 4 billion euros for the 7-year Horizon Europe budgetary period from 2021 to 2027. While the 3-year pilot that closes this year had 2.7 billion allocated, the full EIC was expected to have 10 billion euros for the full Horizon Europe budgetary period. Herman Hauser, inaugural chairman of the 15-strong high-level group of innovators advising on the design of an EIC into Horizon Europe, as his 2-year mandate was finishing last year, said the EIC's 10 billion planned budget would fund the search for excellence among EIC applicants. And Professor Mark Ferguson, current chairman of the EIC and Director General for Science Foundation Ireland and chief scientific advisor to the government of Ireland, by email after Wacky's speech said, quote, "This year, budget for EIC was about 1.5 billion euros. We've had an increasing numbers of applications, funded success around 5%, very large numbers of applications awarded the seal of excellence, i.e. deemed suitable for funding but no budget available. So a budget of 10 billion euros over Horizon Europe would be about 1.5 billion a year, i.e. woefully insufficient. Anything less than that will exacerbate the problem even more. This is a real problem as the EIC wants to crowd in investment from the private sector to enable European companies to grow in scale, something sorely needed for economic recovery and to address pressing problems like climate change. So we all need to do more to persuade the leaders of European countries to support more investment in innovation." End quote. Wise words from Professor Ferguson there. The budgetary cuts to the EIC follows consternation among some members of the European Union about the lack of support for entrepreneurs in the 750 billion euro pandemic recovery fund agreed in the summer that borrows money to allow national governments to provide grants to local businesses. Up until the final negotiations, tens of billions of euros as part of the recovery fund have been expected to go to the European Investment Bank, EIB, and its venture-focused European Investment Fund, or EIF, to support the EIC and its entrepreneurs. This allocation was withdrawn at the final stages, insiders said. As a result, the Funding Innovative Growth Enterprises in Europe conference last month, organised by Prince Constantine van Orange, envoy at techleap.nl, and William Stevens, founder of TechTor, issued a call to action, quote, "for the European investment vehicles, in cooperation with member states, national promotion banks and institutions, institutional investors and private investors to join forces and stimulates sufficient funding for scale-ups in the form of open private equity and venture capital co-investment funds on a European scale." End quote. Oof, long one, that one. In the UK, meanwhile, which has left the European Union, similar concerns have driven Stephen Welton, chairman of the British Growth Fund, to call for a £15 billion, or about $19 billion, National Renewal Fund to recapitalise 21,000 growth economy businesses, companies that turn over between 2.5 and 100 million pounds. Fund will be a mixture of, quote, equity investment from the pensions industry, insurance companies, quote, investment trusts, sovereign wealth funds, and the UK government, end quote. So, dynamic changes afoot there. And on to the news in brief. We'll start with funds, actually. Just give we mentioned a couple of those. Fleury and Sabin have combined to set up a venture fund. Hans Link and Gustavo Cavagnacchi have launched Cotex Ventures, which will invest up to $35 million on behalf of the two large healthcare corporations in Brazil. Greg Tushaus, meanwhile, will manage Corporate Central Credit Union's newly formed FinTech Corporate Venture Capital Vehicle, Emerging Ventures, which will invest up to $400,000 per deal. And Norilsk Nickel, the world's largest miner of palladium and high-grade nickel, has joined several peers in starting corporate venturing, as Ivan Kuzmenkov has set up Perspective Ventures for the group. Holtzbrinck, meanwhile, has helped HV Capital to a $625 million fund. HV Capital has rebranded from Holtzbrinck Ventures and disclosed a $625 million eighth fund backed by its former parent company, Holtzbrinck Publishing in Germany. Fountain Healthcare Partners, meanwhile, has finished its third funder. The drug producer Kyowa Kirin has helped the life sciences venture firm, a spin-off from Milan Corporation, close a oversubscribed $146 million third fund. An E14 fund has parked bid for an $80 million successor. The MIT Media Lab-focused deep tech vehicle is backed with a second fund, having secured $24.6 million of a target $80 million. On to exits. Ant Group, the Alibaba financial spin-off that was set to go public on Thursday in a dual offering that would have been the largest flotation ever. I say was because regulators have sensationally stepped in to suspend the offering due to concerns about Ant's listing qualifications or disclosure requirements. For that to take place 2 days before an IPO is almost unheard of, but for it to do so with a $34.3 billion dual offering and a projected $313 billion valuation seems momentous. Could be related to recent critical comments by Chairman Jack Ma, but it's also a big red flag to Chinese tech companies looking at Hong Kong, Shanghai's Star Exchange as viable alternatives to the US markets. On on-demand services that have blossomed in recent months during the coronavirus pandemic, beverage delivery service Flash & Post Bottle Delivery has seen its monthly sales zoom past $30 million across just 23 German cities, and thus warranted a $1.16 billion acquisition by packaged food producer Dr. Oetker. The transaction will allow Vorwerk's corporate venture capital worm, Vorwerk Ventures, to exit the company in less than 3 years after taking part in the $24 million round. Freshly, the Healthly Meal Kit Service has been acquired by Nestle in a $950 million deal that could stretch to $1.5 billion once earn-out payments have been taken into account. Nestle led the company's last round 3 years ago when it raised $77 million to take its total funding to $107 million. Ocado, meanwhile, has picked up Kindred in a $262 million deal. Robotic picker provider Kindred that will hand exits to Tencent and GV as the food delivery service Ocado looks to improve its logistics and systems. Intel, meanwhile, has integrated Stanford-backed SyncOpt. Intel stepped to buy Stanford University-backed machine learning optimization business SigOpt, which had raised at least $8.6 million in funding. Merck & Co., meanwhile, has agreed to pay $2.75 billion in cash to acquire cancer drug developer Velos Bio and in exits to corporate venture units Takeda Ventures and Chiesi Ventures. Elsewhere in oncology, JW Therapeutics has scored a big exit for WuXi, Aptech and Juno Therapeutics, pharmaceutical companies that co-founded it 4 years ago, by floating in a $300 million IPO in Hong Kong. China-based wealth management and peer-to-peer lending platform Lufax, meanwhile, has floated on New York Stock Exchange, one of the year's biggest IPOs, raising $2.36 billion, a valuation just short of $33 billion. Ping An spun off Lufax and still owns a 39% stake. TikTok owner ByteDance is among the most valuable VC-backed private companies in the world, but its biggest rival, Kuaishou, it's not far behind and looks like being the first to go public as it looks to float on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange to raise $5 billion at a $50 billion valuation. Russian e-commerce platform Ozon has confirmed it has filed for an initial public offering at the Nasdaq Stock Exchange, could generate up to $500 million proceeds. And Russian online streaming platform Ivy has reportedly hired banks to organise an IPO in the US next year. Eva is only 3 years old, but a LiDAR-on-chip technology developer is set to list on the New York Stock Exchange through a reverse merger with a SPAC called Inter Private Acquisition Corp. Upstart, meanwhile, has undertaken a $200 million filing. Rakuten, Alphabet and Progressive are in line for exits after the automated lending service filed to go public. And one that did get away, Squeeze Bio, has squeezed onto the New York Stock Exchange. AIG, Illumina, Alphabet and Orient Life-backed cell therapy developer Squeeze Bio priced its shares at the bottom of its range. On to deals. We've seen a number of big rounds. Reef Technologies was formerly known as Park Jockey and the owner of an app that allows drivers to book parking space. And now it's rebranded and become focused on converted underutilized space to hubs for on-demand services, raising $700 million from investing, including SoftBank Vision Fund and a real estate fund. CAR T-cell therapies are one of the fastest-growing segments in the pharmaceutical space, and the latest is CarsGen Therapeutics, bagging $186 million in a Series C round from investors, including Lilly Asia Ventures. VIP Think has meanwhile piped in $180 million. New Oriental return for the educational product developer Series C round, which was led by SoftBank Vision Fund 2. Digital signature technology provider eSign can be seen as China's DocuSign, but it's an area where social distancing is necessarily led to increased use. And the company has now raised $150 million in the Series D round. Its last round had been led by Ant Group, but was not listed as a participant in the latest round. Conductor, meanwhile, has orchestrated $150 million in funding. Viking Global led the round for the Visa-backed banking software provider in Brazil. Get Your Guide has discovered $133 million. The SoftBank Vision Fund returned, and a convertible note pushed the total for the tourism experience booking service to nearly $800 million. Ronglian ringed up $125 million. The new Oriental Industrial Fund helped Ronglian, also known as Yuntonggang, close a Series F round. It claims the largest yet for a Chinese cloud communication technology provider. And Indonesian online marketplace Bukalapak has pulled in $100 million from investors, including Microsoft and MTech, at a valuation between $2.5 and $3 billion, according to Bloomberg. In Global University Venture, a couple of big deals for Colorado University in Boulder, which has founded quantum technology developer called Quanta, has attracted a Series A at $32 million. Shoulder Innovations has raised $21.6 million for the Series E round out of Western Michigan. And Sense Bio in Cambridge, UK, has raised $50 million, backed by Cambridge Innovation Capital. On to people. Miles Kirby, formerly a managing director of Qualcomm Ventures and Allianz's Aviate Fund, has launched a UK-based accelerator and fund called Deep Tech Labs in the Cambridge, UK region. So there might be some links up there to come. And the fresh fruit provider Dole Ventures has selected Barbara Guillepillon to head its corporate venture unit, Dole Ventures, after 5 years leading Unilever's Foundry Asia business. SoftBank, meanwhile, has rotated some of its team. It's lost members Ruan Wereseke, Penny Boodle, Avi Golan, Ted Fike, and Justin Wilson, while after earlier departees, Maria Khan and Carolina Brocado, but gained former Corbett CEO Tony Liu, who has joined SoftBank as a venture partner. And that's all the highlights from the past week. Thanks, everyone.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.